frugality recognizes that spending is a skill that needs to be honed in on, and there is space to spend, and there's even space to spend on high-priced items if it falls within our values. It's not the avoidance of spending. It's not deprivation. Frugality is honing the skill set of spending.
My name is Lisa, mother of 8 and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today, I am having on Jen and Jill from the Frugal Friends podcast. The name pretty much says it all, but they help teach people how to become frugal in a way that I feel is a bit different than the one that we usually hear. Make a budget, stay on it, be really strict, which is all good stuff. I've advocated for that. It has helped me in the past, but they have a different way of looking at it that I actually really appreciate, and I think it makes a lot of sense. So without further ado, let's jump into the discussion with Jen and Jill. Okay, we have on Jen and Jill from the Frugal Friends podcast. I have to tell you, I have identical twin cousins and their names are Jill and Jenny. So this is like, oh yeah.
That's so fun.
I won't forget your names too quickly. Yeah, it's so funny. So we're going to talk debt-free stories, frugality. Obviously, that is the entire topic of your podcast. I was just listening to it before this, and you were talking about some habits to get into, to have frugality on autopilot. And that is something I've thought about a lot. Some people seem to be very naturally frugal. It comes really easy. And some people have to learn and implement some habits. So let's start with introductions. Tell us a little bit about you, your podcast, and the mission of your whole thing that you share on the internet.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us. My name is Jen Smith, and I am not a trained personal finance expert, but I am a researched one. And I got into frugality as the person who is not naturally frugal. And I was paying off debt with my husband. We paid off $78,000 of debt in 2 years. And that's really what got me interested in the intersection of earning more to solve your financial problems with spending less and decreasing your expenses, and realizing frugality is not all about spending less, but spending better. And Jill and I started the podcast in about a year after we paid off all of our debt. And it's just kind of our views on frugality have grown, evolved from there together.
And my name is Jill, and I co-host the Frugal Friends podcast alongside Jen. And I would have described myself, still do, as a naturally frugal person. However, have come to redefine what frugality means. I think that when Jen and I first started the podcast together, I was probably more borderline cheap in my approach to money and financial management. Part of that had to do with living off a very low income. My background is in the field of social work, which it's really amazing for me to get to look at mental health and money management side by side, and something we like to talk about a lot, but really recognizing what is true frugality that can last a lifetime regardless of our levels of income. And what Jen and I have discovered side by side is that it's a management and stewardship of all of our resources. It's going to look different for every person, but I think starting at that foundation does create a lot of space for freedom in identifying what does healthy, aimed at well-being money management look like for me and my family.
Yeah, I like that you guys both have different perspectives. One of you being naturally frugal and one of you having to learn this, maybe put a little bit more effort in. You also brought up a few things about the habits over the years. And something that I've noticed is that it has a lot more to do with the behavior and your thoughts toward it than it does the income. I like your, obviously, Jen, you're talking about the intersection of those, because obviously, when you have more to work with, it's not going to be as difficult. But
I have noticed people struggling at all, not all income levels, okay, but a lot of various income levels. And I've seen people not struggle at pretty low income levels. So there's a lot to be said. I think whenever somebody isn't naturally frugal, they kind of sometimes feel like it's impossible until my income comes or goes up. And I don't really see that happening. If you have a certain job where there's not a lot of like upward mobility with it, you think that's not really something that's ever going to be possible for me. So talking about that piece, like the behavioral piece, I think is so important. And like you said, stewarding, we're going to talk not just about your like what you spend, but then also simple living and like how you spend your time. All of that's very important. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, this might be something that you guys just have like to rattle off, or you might have to think about it. I'm not sure. What are the four pillars of frugality?
Yeah. So those are the things that we want to be good stewards of, right? And we kind of even go back and forth and expand on these pillars, but assuming like a house or a gazebo has four pillars, it just sounds better, right? So
yeah.
Money is the first one you think about when you think about frugality, you think about being a good steward of your money. You're right, Lisa, a lot of people do see frugality as a means to an end. Like when I get here, I can stop being frugal. Like I don't want to get control of my spending habits. I just want to be able to afford them. But
right, yeah.
There is no amount of money you can make that will solve certain spending problems. So we think of money, but we also see time as a pillar. So we want to be good stewards of our time. We don't want to be clipping coupons for hours on end to save, you know, money on stuff we didn't need or won't use, or just to save $3 here and there. Unless you enjoy couponing and that's the hobby that you've chosen, then that's not a means to being frugal. That's a means to enjoyment. So another is physical mm-hmm. space. So we want to be good stewards of the space around us. So in our homes, we love to talk about simplicity and minimalism, but not for the sake of minimalism and simplicity, but for the sake of feeling like you are in a home that feels complete, that feels like a sanctuary, that feels right, so that you can stop buying in order to complete. And then also our mental emotional capacities. We want to honor the season that we are in when we are trying to be good stewards of all these resources. Some seasons you'll be able to do more, and some seasons will look different. You will do less. And then also recognizing sometimes we live lives that look like other people's seasons. So we just did an episode on managing money with chronic illness. And so while some people have health problems as a season in their life, other people are dealing with these things on an ongoing basis, and their finances will look different. And so this is kind of how the pillars have evolved over time. But these are the things we look at when we're looking at frugality. We want to be good stewards of these resources. I forgot to say natural resources as well, when we're thinking about even like physical stuff.
Yeah. You bring up a good point about the minimalism, and not just for the sake of being a minimalist. Something that I find happens with me is whenever I have my home in a way that I feel like it's very manageable. I have 8 kids. And so it can be, it's like life or death to keep the house pretty minimal, because I cannot keep up with this many items from this many different people. And I was in Target yesterday, which is very rare. I go to Target like 2 times a year with a couple of my kids, and we are just kind of meandering through, and there are so many cute things. And there are so many times where I could almost have convinced myself that that would be something that would add value to our lives and put it in the cart. But we ended up with almost nothing, because I thought about, where would I put this in my house? Now I have to manage this item. And so it keeps me from spending. Because when I go there, all I'm thinking about is, how am I going to manage that item in my house? It's like a constant, it's not even the money as much as that. So it does work hand in hand.
And that highlights something that's so crucial that many of us do need to practice. It doesn't come automatically for most of us, but that pause that you just described, the knowledge of yourself, your circumstances, your home, what brings you peace, where contentment lies, what is enough. that you probably didn't run through that entire list in your head, but you've clearly cultivated a knowledge of yourself and your lifestyle to be able to say, yes, I like this, but it's not going to fit into my world. It's not going to be something that I'm going to feel good about spending money on. I don't need this thing, and I can walk away from it without deprivation.
Yeah, there are even a couple of really cute pillows. And I have one couch in my living room that doesn't have pillows. And so I could have easily justified it. But then I imagined my kids who already make all of these pillow forts, which we have pillows in the living room. We have six of them. But I think six is enough because every day I have to put those up. And so then thinking about two more pillows to always be putting back on the couch, there are certain things that are worth it to me. And right now that felt like too much. Like, I'm not going to want to put those back up on the couch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's a time cost too. Everything we buy costs time and management in addition to like physical and mental resources.
Yeah, and that's something I feel like we don't think about much whenever we're talking about decluttering, which this is not a decluttering episode, so we'll try to veer back on course. But is whenever people feel like it's a waste of money to get rid of something without considering how much of their life has to get poured into managing all of those things. So I'm with you. I feel like that does really go hand in hand.
I want to interrupt this episode real quick to tell you about one of my favorite sponsors, and that is Tubes & Co. Just this morning, actually, I got a text from my mom to our sisters, our entire family group, who needs to place a Tubes order. I need some new foundation. Anyone want to throw something on for free shipping? But I had already just gotten in my new order that I ordered a couple of weeks ago of my Tubes & Co. makeup. We all just love it so much. It has natural and organic, clean ingredients, nothing that you have to worry about as you are trying to improve your health, cook more clean in your home. Sometimes we forget about skincare, and our skin is our body's largest organ. So what goes on there can actually make its way in and affect our health. It's hard to find high quality products. You don't feel like you're sacrificing how you usually do your makeup or your skincare, when normally I feel like with brands that are cleaner, you get the cleaner ingredients, but you sacrifice kind of the quality, the feel. Not the case with Tubes & Co. I have the foundation, the eyebrow pencil, the mascara, the palette for eyeshadow. I also really love the skincare. So their moisturizers are really great this time of year. As it's getting colder, I need something to moisturize my skin. And I love their tallow balm because, again, it's all clean, natural ingredients. Tallow from grass-fed cows. It doesn't just sit on the skin. It actually makes its way in. So just the whole thing. All their products, I've tried so many of them. Every single one I've tried, I have loved. Tubes & Co. is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners 10% off over on their website, tubesandco.com, with the code FARMHOUSE. Again, that's T-O-U-P-S and co.com. Use the code FARMHOUSE to get 10% off. Tubes & Co. is a small, family-run, made-in-America company you can feel really good about supporting and good about the ingredients that's going on your skin. Again, thanks to Tubes & Co. for sponsoring today's episode.
You also brought up cheap versus frugality. And this is something that I feel like, unless you're frugal and you've practiced this a lot, might look the same from the outside. But I've always considered myself very frugal, but not cheap. So there's been a lot of things that I've invested in over the years that either has been for the kitchen to help me make food more at scale, like healthy food at scale in my business. Certain things that people probably who were in like the same financial position as me at the time when I bought them would think that's insane. But I've always been very, very frugal, but understand when something adds value to my life. So have either of you noticed that to be the case?
Absolutely. I think that the difference between, and this is an evolving definition, honestly, the difference between frugal and cheap. Cheap being it takes advantage of people, takes advantage of systems, will do whatever to get a deal, versus frugality is being good stewards, knowing what we actually want to buy, buying based on our values. I also think that cheap is never wanting to spend. So it's kind of doing all of these ninja moves around spending money just to avoid it. Whereas frugality recognizes that spending is a skill that needs to be honed in on, and there is space to spend, and there's even space to spend on high priced items if it falls within our values and what we say our lifestyle is, what our needs are, how we are stewarding all of our resources. So it's not the avoidance of spending, it's not deprivation. Frugality is honing the skill set of spending and saving.
Yeah, I think the way you just described that, I literally brought up some habits that I've noticed through people in my own life or friends, whatever, that I've noticed that have more of the not spending at all costs, but in some ways still really struggling with money. And then the flip side of that is using your buying power as an opportunity in some cases, actually finding something that, like for me, some of the things that when we were, you know, we got out of debt like you guys, we paid down paid off our mortgage over 10 years ago. There were certain things that I would never spend a dime on, but certain things that I would spend to some people. And I've even said this to some friends who are kind of that mindset, think I'm insane, and they've paid off like so much. So I find myself very confident in knowing what to spend money on and what not to, because I am more of the naturally frugal person. I come from frugal parents. They've never had a car loan, never. It's just not something people in my family do. So it's very, I guess, easy for me. How does one move from like having the traditional American mindset to being frugal? Like, that's a very loaded question, but what are some practical steps?
Yeah, it's a journey. And even still, I will struggle with this cheap versus frugal mindset, because before I viewed myself as frugal, I didn't view myself as an overspender. I came from a very like lower middle class family. There was no debt, but there was also no savings, like no talk of investing, no talk of saving for the future, because we were really just making ends meet. And so I thought I was frugal because I bought generic brands and I opted for the grande at Starbucks instead of the venti. So like, that's what I thought it was.
Okay.
And when we started paying off our student loans, that's when I really had to grapple with changing my spending habits. I wasn't going to change my spending habits. I didn't think there was anything wrong with them. I didn't want paying off debt to mean I didn't have to I couldn't live my life. I just wanted to outspend, or I just wanted to out-earn the problem.
Yeah.
I wanted to just earn more. 2 months into that mindset, I got shingles from overworking.
Oh boy.
And that's what forced me to learn frugality. And I had to look at why I was buying stuff. I realized a lot of it was influence. Like, this was before even we talk about influencers on social media now. Mm-hmm. This was like before that. I was influenced by friends. I was influenced by family, by coworkers, by my own like deep-rooted ideas of what I should look like and how I should pursue looking like it. And so I was influenced to buy all of these things. And so my spending decisions, while not outrageous, were more mindless. So I had to, and this started actually after paying off debt. Because when we were paying off debt, it was just no to everything. Not a strategy that I necessarily recommend, but it was easier because I didn't have to think about my yeses and nos. It was just no to everything. And so after we became debt-free, I had this almost debt payoff hangover where it's like, okay, now what do I say yes to? I can't just keep saying no to everything for the rest of my life, but I don't know how to say yes without guilt. And I don't know what to say no to anymore. And I had to really look at what are the things I love? What are the things I enjoy? And how can I incorporate more of that in my life for free or at cost, and not feel guilty about it? And what are the things that I really didn't miss while I was paying off debt that I thought were really integral parts of my life? What are the things that I'm spending on because my family says I should, or my friends are just doing, and I think I need to spend on to fit in. So it was actually doing a lot of like self work, like self learning, which we don't take a lot of time to do. We do a lot of time to think about, you know, treat yourself spending.
Yeah.
But not a lot of like internal, like, who am I? What do I want to be known for? And what do I want my spending to teach my children about spending? Because spending is a skill and we're not taught that. So how do I know what's right for me to spend money on and what's not right for me to spend money on?
Yeah. Do you have anything to add to that, Jill?
I just think it's not frugality for frugality's sake. I think somebody listening, okay, how do I move towards frugality? I do think that each person's going to need to ask their own questions of what is my aim with my finances? But again, to broaden the picture with all of my resources, what's my aim with my physical space, my aim with my mental and emotional capacities, my aim with my time and my money? And how do I want to steward all of those things well? I think it starts in our minds, the ways that we think about things, how we feel about each one of these categories is then going to impact our behaviors. And I think so often we jump just to behaviors first, change this, this, that, or that. That's where sometimes we become accustomed to just going with what everybody else is doing or telling us to do because we haven't done the work, the journey, the time to look at, but what do I value with all of these things? What do I want to aim at? What's well-being for me? What brings me joy? What depletes me? Not saying that we can always only lean into the joyful things. There's going to be depleting aspects of all of our lives that we don't have much say in, but whatever we do have influence and control over, what does it mean for me, for you as an individual to be a good steward of those things? How can I say yes to the things that actually matter and no to the things that don't? And by in that manner, it's not deprivation because I'm saying no to the things that aren't hard to say no to. And so I think some of this has to do with looking at our relationship with money when it comes solely to personal finances and talking about frugality in that regard is what does this mean for my money? And what am I spending on that does bring me joy? What am I spending on them? Like, why I don't feel great about that. It's stirring up some guilt and shame. Is that accurate? Are there changes now that I want to make in my behavior? But first, it's going to need to start with some of that self-exploration, self-knowledge to bring about value for our experiences, for the things that we do choose to spend on.
Yeah, I think looking at what you value is so important. That's what drove me whenever my husband was working for the city that we lived in at the time. So that's not like a super high paying job. And I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom no matter what. Like it didn't matter. And so it would have, you know, there was nothing that I wouldn't sacrifice. So for each of you, what are some examples of things that you said other people maybe spend a lot of money on, or not even a lot, but just things that you expect you're going to have to spend money on that whenever you took that hard look at yourself and your own personal values for you and your family, what are a few things that you thought, wait, this can go, this is no big deal. This isn't something that's, you know, we're going to miss.
Yeah. So for me personally, and it's different for both Jill and I, so we have like very complementary views, but like different ways of executing. For me, it's eating out. Like I don't necessarily care for the experience of a restaurant. It's nice every once in a while, a couple times a year, but Jill and our Frugal Friends listeners know, like Carrabba's is a fancy restaurant for me. Like it is the epitome of going out to dinner. And so I don't spend money in places that, you know, for me, the rule is I don't spend money in restaurants that require me to tip. So, you know, like I love tipping and want to do it generously, but that's kind of just the baseline for, you know, I hate dishes. I hate doing dishes and I don't love cooking. So I will forego the nicer restaurants and do the quick service like the Chipotle. I would rather have more money for something like that.
Okay.
Travel, international travel. I don't love traveling. I like getting away, but the idea of sitting in airports and on planes, it's just like not enjoyable for me. I also don't like road trips. So
yeah.
We don't spend a lot of money on travel. And I know I'm like the worst millennial right now,
but that's funny though that you say that, because it's like you're saying this is what millennials like, and you had to think to myself like, but do I care? You know, is this something that really matters to me?
Yep. I had to do that hard work and say, Jen, you do not like sitting on the airplane. You just don't. And I had to talk to myself like that. But I do like coffee, and I will. sit at a coffee shop and work about maybe I try to once a week. Sometimes I get it. Sometimes I don't, but I will spend on that all day, every day. And I'll get like, maybe I'll get one drink. Maybe I'll get two drinks while I'm there. Maybe I'll get a drink and lunch. Like I don't limit myself. So
yeah,
something like that. I will, but there are a lot of big things that, that we just don't spend money on that millennials are supposed to love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm kind of with you on the travel thing. Like in my mind, I like travel, maybe because I think I'm supposed to. And I still play around with this all the time. Like maybe we should plan a trip here or there. And then whenever we're gone, I'm like, it's so much easier at home. I love home. Home's where I have my comfortable bed and my just, you know, everything, like all of my healthy food, my sourdough starter, my oven, my Dutch oven. And so for me, I'm
home
with
is
you.
Where like, the sourdough starter is.
Home's where the sourdough bread is on the stove right now. I need to cut into it, put some butter on it. So how about for you, Jill? What are some things for you that you're like?
You said a trigger word for me, and that is bread and butter, and that is my core values. And I will spend vigorously in that
spoken to Jill
area. Mm-hmm. I've got two examples, a bigger one and a smaller one. So the bigger one is related to housing. There was a time when my husband and I lived in an RV and we house sat. And so for us, we didn't have a big value on having the American dream of massive house, white picket fence, all of these things. We preferred to be able to pay down my student loan debt super fast and have freedom and flexibility with our time because we didn't have a whole lot of physical space that we had to manage and clean and fix and all of that. And that was a beautiful part of tiny living for us. We don't do that anymore, but I think that that fluidity, the willingness to be able to sacrifice one thing for something else that's a higher value at the time is what that housing did for us. And now currently we are in about a 1400 square foot home and loving life in this new season. But for me, I don't currently value spending a lot of money on clothing, shoes, makeup, coffee out. Those are not things that I value, which has shifted for me a bit. I used to be at the thrift stores and yard sales pretty much every weekend just to get the deal. But what it meant was my closet was so stacked with stuff that sure, I may have paid $2 for, but I still wasn't finding much that I liked in my closet. And it felt overwhelming and chaotic to me. And so through the years, shifting my understanding that yes, I still like clothes, but that doesn't mean that I need to be buying them constantly. I can find what works for me, what I like, what's durable, possibly even spend more money on it so that it lasts me years and years and it's quality and sustainable. And then I'm not spending my time or my money out shopping constantly because I've found what contentment looks like in my closet. And so it frees my time up and my money up to be able to do the things that I've realized I actually really enjoy. So friends, I'm over here loving travel. I'm actually calling in from a hotel room right now because that's where I want to spend on. And I brought my one backpack of three outfits and like hardly any makeup, but I am staying in a really beautiful hotel because I've learned what I can say no to, and it's not sacrifice, or it's at least not deprivation, to be able to say yes to just really awesome experiences.
I want to take a quick break to tell you about my blogging masterclass. So 7, almost 8 years ago, I bought the domain farmhouseonboone.com and started posting on a blog. Since then, I have learned so much. The first several years was just me figuring out what to post, lots of light bulb moments. Spoiler alert, it's no longer a journal where you share what your family's doing and what you're working on. Blogging is a whole different strategy. A lot of people think that blogging is dead, but it is far from dead. It's actually the most profitable part of our business is blogging. So it is by no means dead, but it does require a whole different strategy. And I see a lot of people making a lot of mistakes, even some seasoned bloggers who aren't aware of like how blogging has changed. That is why I have my free masterclass where I show you my 4-step framework that I use for becoming a full-time blogger. So for over 5 years now, my husband's been home. We've made blogging a full-time income. And you can find that masterclass over at bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school, all one word, all lowercase, bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school.
Okay, so can you think of anything that we all think, other than what we mentioned, are must-dos, that like some common things, common pitfalls that people fall into that maybe they need some reminders that you don't actually have to do it?
Coffee's good at home. I know Jen loves to spend out, and that is fine. I'm just going to speak to the person who feels like they have to get coffee out. I have learned how to make better coffee. I've learned how to make better craft cocktails. That's another thing. I love going out to eat and I will spend on it, but it also means that in order to be able to afford that for my income level right now, I've got to eat at home a lot to be able to enjoy a nice dinner out and save up the money for that. But what I've also found is, as much as I enjoy craft cocktails, I'm a better mixologist at home. I love it when I get to choose my ratios. So I'm just not going to spend on it out when I can learn the things that I really like, get to experiment at home, share it with friends, and it's a fraction of the cost. Like even the traditional millennial, Gen Z, or whatever generation you fall into, things that people are doing, I think there are ways that we can find enjoyment of that in manners that actually more align with our values. I like craft cocktails with friends, taking our time together. And that doesn't always happen in a restaurant, a loud bar at happy hour. So finding like the truest version of this in the manner that I value it.
Yeah. I would say on the other end of the spectrum, we look at these small expenses a lot because they're easy. They happen very frequently. But I would say even more important than small expenses, yes, that's where we want to train, but we really master our spending when we look at these quote unquote fixed expenses. And if you've ever made a budget, you know the first category for your spending is your quote unquote fixed expenses. And we think that these expenses are fixed. When in reality, yes. they are changeable. So for most people, that's housing and transportation. So we look to be good stewards of our money and our space and our mental energy. And so often that results in probably realizing you need a smaller house than you originally thought. Because if you don't have a ton of stuff, then you don't need to house it so much. And then that's less time cleaning. That's less money spent on a mortgage. And sometimes you don't even need to own. It's becoming more affordable to rent in more and more cities. And unless you really truly want to be a homeowner, that's one of those things where you have to look inside and not just do what, you know, the quote unquote American dream is leading you to. Look inside and say, do I love maintaining a home? Do I love mowing the lawn? Do I love all of these things that are associated with homeownership every weekend? And sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes the answer is no. And that's great for you because it's becoming more and more affordable to rent in more and more cities. So it's looking at those things. And then transportation. Like I bought a minivan last year and because I was pregnant with my second child. And in no way do I think I needed a minivan for two children. Like a lot of people, as soon as, I mean, even as a, when a first one comes, or definitely when a second one comes, they jump on the minivan. But I could have easily had like a sedan. It would have been cramped. It would have not been the best situation. I would have missed out on all my buttons to open my doors. But in reality, those are a luxury. And those are a luxury I chose into, but I didn't need them. So really distilling down your purchases to see, to be honest with yourself, what is a need and what is a want? And you can want anything. It's not bad to want to push a button and open a door on your minivan. But you really have to be honest, because when you turn these things into needs, like wants into needs, then that's where you start overpaying for them. I know what is a need for me: four wheels to transport two car seats. Everything else beyond that, a safe four wheels. Everything beyond that is a want. And so then I can temper my expectations and my budget accordingly, so I can get as many wants as I can, quote unquote, afford. So those are really, I think, the biggest things that we're kind of maybe led by people we know and people we don't know, people we just see on the internet, people we just listen to on podcasts, you know, like my way of doing frugality isn't the way Jill does it. And we just, you know, want everyone to know that everyone's life is going to look a little different, and that's okay. Just be honest with why it looks different.
Yeah. And you need to be mindful of that when you're on social media too, because like you said, you have influencers, you and I, both of you and I, this is what we do. So there are going to be times when you're sharing something, some kind of ad or something. And if you can't afford that, if you have laid out your budget and that's not going to work, then, you know, you need to figure out, like, you need to have it on paper before going to the internet and being told that you need something. And it's all very abstract until it's laid out in a budget. So if this sounds like, yeah, but what difference is that going to make? What difference is that going to make? You need to put it to paper and you need to see what difference it's going to make. Because I've talked to so many people who say, okay, I make this and I cannot figure out where the money's going. You need to figure out where the money's going. If you can't, you know, you need to see, because likely these little things that seem like nothing, even a trip to Target is dangerous. I mean, there's just so much beautiful stuff, like, that you could convince yourself, oh, that's convenient, or that's gonna be so cute on my table. You need to, I mean, everybody probably hates that, like, make a budget. But if this sounds like great, but that's not really gonna make a difference, then you might need to see if it really does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say even before that behavior of making a budget, it is that introspection of what is happening for me? What are the thoughts, the emotions, that the experiences that are coming before the spending? And what is my spending telling me about the things that matter, maybe the things that don't matter? Does my spending feel as though it's actually aligned with the things that I say are important to me? And one of the best ways of doing that is looking back at a 90-day spending transaction history. So that could mean, it means gathering everything up, bank transactions, credit card transactions, everything, including your lodging expenses and fixed expenses, all of it, and really looking at where is the money going. Sometimes, yeah, it most likely isn't that $3, $5 coffee here and there. Maybe it is the fact that your bills and utilities are taking up such a huge percentage of your take-home income that it is really stretching you beyond what you're comfortable with. And that's going to be an even bigger thing to look at, very worthwhile to look at. But I think before we even need to figure out how to be really great at budget spreadsheets, it's just a matter of understanding ourselves more. Where is this going? Is it going to the places that I want it to be going or that I thought it was going? And then take it from there.
Yeah, definitely.
So what if you're a person that, I feel like some people might say, I value all of those things. Like, how do you narrow it down if you feel like there's, you know, too much money going into every category?
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to say, like, I want to spend it in alignment with my values, but I just value everything. Yeah, and the reality is you don't value everything. And if you do value a lot, then starting with that 90-day transaction history is a really good start. So before we start budgeting forward, we want to look back at our spending. And that's going to tell you how to budget, because no company makes a budget for the future without first looking at what they spent. And so why do we try to do that as people, you know, as individuals? So look back at what you've spent and then think about the transaction. Do you remember it? Was it one of those mindless transactions, one of those habitual transactions? Now you can be aware of that moving forward so that you interrupt the habit loop that happens when you are making that habitual purchase. Is it a purchase that you thought would get you a feeling or thought would do something for you that now with, you know, 30 days to reflect, you realize it didn't? So next time you go to make that purchase, you realize I've already tried this before and it didn't work. How can I try something different? So I think even more important than the budget is this 90 days of this 90-day reflection almost, right? You won't take 90 days to do it, but it's a reflection of 90 days, because that's in one quarter, you're going to probably see all the scenarios that come at you in a full year. And just looking at what's going on. If you are somebody who loves to do things really fast, a really great way to interrupt the pattern of your habits is to do a no spend challenge. So for 30 days, no spending on discretionary items. We're paying all of our bills. We're not getting kicked out of our houses. Just anything discretionary is what we're stopping. You know, so when we have the opportunity to say yes or no, the answer is no for 30 days. And that teaches us, what are the things that I'm really miserable without? What are the things I thought I'd miss, but I actually didn't even realize I was missing out on? And then what are the ways that I was meeting my needs with money, but I was able to get creative and meet the needs even better at a lower cost or for free? And so that's, you know, in addition to saving you some money, those are the lessons a no-spend challenge can teach you while we kind of look back and reflect on that transaction history.
Yeah, I want to underscore what Jen just said there about we can still honor our values without the necessity of spending money. So while we talked about frugality not requiring deprivation, it may still require a degree of sacrifice. Thankfully, that does feel a little bit better than deprivation. Not always great, though. And I think this is where our skills of prioritization are going to come into place of, sure, you may have a lot of values, and it may come a point where you need to pick, what are my top three values, though, that I'm going to choose to spend on? And what are the values that either I'm going to choose not to spend on, or I can find creative ways to honor that value without spending money? And that goes back to some of the examples we already gave about how I love beauty. I value beauty when I see it out in nature and when I can put on beautiful clothing and you name it. But that doesn't mean that I have to spend a ton and constantly on it. I can find what works for me to free up money in other areas. I value very good coffee. And I've learned that because of that, I often have to do it myself. It's often better when I'm able to make it exactly how I want it and have the control that I enjoy. Yep. So I think sometimes this endeavor can get us even closer to our values and satisfying them more than when we mindlessly spent on them, because we are much more aware of ourselves and our level of enjoyment when we bring in that added piece of curiosity and desire for self-understanding as it relates to the things that we spend and save on.
Yeah, I really like the idea of going back and looking at each transaction and doing, like you said, what happened to that item? Where is it? Did it help me clean the house the way I thought it would? Did I read that book to the kids like I thought I would? did the pillow get thrown off the couch or it annoy me? Did the toy get lost? Because that's something in our house. Kids like have to have something. And then, you know, they always want something with batteries, like remote control. And then the remote control's here, the thing's here. They can't play with it anymore. So I think that's actually like a really good way to look at it. Thinking about, just to train your mind, did that fulfill the purpose that I'd hoped for? You also mentioned, I believe, Jen, you said something about you have to get creative during these no spin challenges. So in your opinion, how does consumerism rob us of our ability to be creative?
I love that question. It's so easy to solve all of our problems with money, right? You don't have something, you go to Amazon and it's at your house in 2 days. If you want to do something, you just go on the internet and order it. Right. And there's a level of that is amazing, right? Amazing that the infrastructure and technology has made that available for us when we need it. So that's great. We don't want to discount that. But it robs us of the opportunity to get creative to meet our needs. And so we're not saying that you can never use Amazon again. We're saying if you need something, or if at any day we have a number of quote unquote problems that we need to solve, decisions we need to make. And if we just, for one of those every day, decided, wait, before I spend money to solve this problem or meet this need, what is there a way that I could meet it without it? Or I could save money on it. So if we think, is there a way I can reuse something, repurpose something, get, you know, borrow something? And if those things don't work out, like within 24 hours, we look at how can I get it used or at a lower cost. I go to Poshmark, to eBay, to the thrift store. And if it's another 24 hours and I can't solve the problem, you know, in that method, then I can go to the Amazon, the Walmart, the Target. So we're not saying like you have to buy everything used or you have to get everything for free, because like as parents, it's just like impossible to do that, right? There is a shortage of time throughout the day. And sometimes we need Amazon. Sometimes, we need Walmart. But if we could just retrain our brains to seek the alternative first, then we can build this creative muscle. And when you see something like, oh, I thought I could, you know, I thought I got creative to get that for free, but I couldn't. And I ended up getting it on Amazon. But later you learn a way to get it for free or less expensive. And that's a solution you have found that you would not have been looking for otherwise. So it's really a muscle that you train. There are questions you don't know to ask, right? And there are opportunities you don't know to look for until you start. And so once you start training your brain to think this way, over time, you will find ways to get creative.
Yeah. Man, so many little things popped into my brain of things that I like bought and then later realized, I could have definitely just done this. Like just stupid little things that I, you know, quickly buy now on Amazon because it's like $10 that I don't even like that it's in my house now. Like it's just somewhere I had to put it somewhere. We have a good size house, but not like massive for 10 people. And just that more than anything, I'm like, oh, I can relate to what you're saying. Like, how could I have used something else or just DIY? And I'm a DIYer. This is something I almost always think of first. But even still, I'm like, oh, yeah, that thing. Like, that could stand. I could have stood to have thought about that for a little bit longer. Totally.
And sometimes not even for the sake of saving money or pinching pennies, although that can be a benefit to this. But I think this is where it almost more so intersects with just the good stewardship concept, where we are not just mindlessly buying, but training ourselves in a new way of reducing, reusing, fixing, problem solving, just moving away from this buy, throw out, buy, throw out mentality that has even bigger impacts than just on our wallets. I think an example of this, again, not a huge money saving piece, but helping in that cultivation of creativity, I challenged myself to not buy more cleaning products. Even when the cleaning products that I have ran out, what can I do with what I already have on hand to create the cleaning products that I need? And lo and behold, I'm sure you and all of your listeners are going to, you're probably much deeper into this journey than I am, but now discovering so much more low tox ways of being able to clean, where I think this is especially where subscriptions can really trip us up. You know, especially Amazon wants us to just put it on automatic. You're going to need this delivered to your house every 30 days. But instead of doing that, hey, vinegar, baking soda, dish soap, lemons, that's kind of all that you need to solve all of the problems that you're going to have.
Literally,
in
white vinegar
and around your home.
All your problems.
And
white vinegar. It's just a wonder that that can happen.
It smells gross, but
I know it is.
It's gonna clean. Yeah, it's so much better for the air quality, for the surfaces of the home, for just the environment of the environment at large, and not bringing so much more plastic into my home. And then, maybe I'm saving $15 a month. I'll take it, but all the other peripheral benefits that we can notice when we embrace this creativity, when we set a pause for ourselves before we purchase and we try and problem solve versus just buying without thinking.
My husband and I, we used to always say that whenever, like 15 years ago when we were first married and we were on a very tight budget for, I'd say the first like 10 years we were married, we were like, we're greener than like the people who try to be green just because we're so frugal. Like everything we do is just green just by default because we don't want to throw anything away. Like we use everything. It, like I was noticing it with just like every little thing we did. I'm like, it's funny. Green people say, don't do this. And I don't even do the thing before that. Like that's not even close to a need. So you're so right. Like it's whenever you're frugal, it does. It goes hand in hand and it feels so good. Whenever you're able to use something that you have, it's more than the sum of its parts. Like it's better than even like the cost savings, like you said.
Yeah, you can't buy your way to green.
No, you can't. Okay, so tell us about where to find you, your podcast. I believe you have a book maybe, and anything else you want to share.
So yeah, we have a podcast, Frugal Friends, and you can listen to it wherever you're listening to this podcast. Just search for Frugal Friends. And if you want more, we release a newsletter 3 times a week with tips to save money. So fun, like money saving hacks. Like the other day I wrote about how to get all clad quality stainless steel cookware for a fraction of the price by just knowing what makes all clad quality. You could buy quality cookware without the name brand. So stuff like that. How can we get quality at an affordable price without just opting for buying the cheap thing? So that's called the Friend Letter, and you can get that at frugalfriendspodcast.com. And we are releasing a book. It'll be out in 2025, but I actually have a book in the meantime. It's on Amazon. It's called the No Spend Challenge Guide. Yeah. So if you're interested in doing a no spend challenge and learning how to do it in a way that shows you what you value, what you can't live without, so that you can practice values-based spending better, then check out the No Spend Challenge Guide on Amazon.
Awesome. Yeah. And go follow up over on the Frugal Friends podcast. Lots of years of content there if you're trying to train your brain to be frugal. So much good information. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jen and Jill, for joining me.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Victor is doing better. Hopefully he's on the mend soon. He's a little bit sick here, but I hope he wasn't a huge distraction. And I will see you in the next episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.